Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for being part of my day and for allowing me to be part of yours. It's like a dream come true for me. I'm excited about having our good friend Jim Ostroff back on the show, too. Jim is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He's a great guy, a smart human being, and an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Well, good morning, Jim.
It's good to have you back, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
And, you know, Jim, one of the things you'll be glad to know that I had to run you by, or you might be interested to know, but also glad to find out, that I had to run you by my company's sociological department.
Really?
And, Ford had a sociological department, and if you had good personal habits, as determined by the company's sociological department, you got a raise to $5 a day and for 8 hours of work instead of 9 hours of work for half that much if you passed the sociological good personal habits test. And so I wanted you to know that we have a new rule in 2006. You have to pass our good personal habits test to be on the show. And I want you to know that we ran you by that department and you passed.
That's because I clean the plate every day.
That's right. You did that and you slicked your hair back and brushed your teeth. So anyway, I know you'll be glad to know that you passed our test there.
I'm ecstatic. Thank you.
Jim, this, as I told the audience, I've been reading Kiplinger for decades, and this may be the best letter I've ever seen.
Well, we try harder.
Well, you know, some days a diamond, some days a stone, but this is definitely a diamond. Let's start at first we have folks about, I guess, about 10 kind of quick little predictions, little issues to cover. And first issue, which I think is very appropriate, is your comments on what will be the troop levels, what will be the troops be doing over the next year in Iraq. Talk to us about that, Jim.
Well, basically, we believe that this will be a pivotal year that will ultimately, in many ways, determine not only how successful the United States has been in its efforts in Iraq, but what this means for the population of Iraq. And basically this, we believe that the U.S. this year will begin to reduce its military presence in Iraq as more of the government forces and people take over. Everyone knows that progress will be very slow. It's a very difficult situation, and there are built-in tensions. But certainly, they'll have Iraqis will use revenues from their oil sales,
which is starting to flow again now.
Right, it is starting to flow, and in a greater amount. Then, of course, in April, they'll have officially a new Iraqi government.
Right.
So the various things are beginning to, you might say, fall into place, come into place, and the U.S. will be scaling back. But,
what
no
do we got,
about
160,000 troops in there now? A 100,000 troops in Iraq.
I would say that's a reasonable
assumption. I hope that's the case. One of the points I made, Jim, not unlike what you guys have said here, is that Iraqis are claiming that they'll still have plenty of challenges, but what's different about this year from 2 years ago is they're starting to claim those challenges.
They're starting
to say, these are our challenges, they're ours to fix.
That is absolutely key.
It is. But here's the other thing, Jim, and I think this is pivotal, I think. Instead of turning to violence to prove their point, to make their issue known and to get their way, they're turning to three other things. They're turning to politics, protests, and lawsuits.
Right.
And as long as they'll do those three things instead of blowing people up, that's called democracy, isn't it?
It is, and that is ultimately really a hallmark of real progress.
Right.
I'm saying here, I don't agree with you. I detest what you say, and I'm going to
vote against you next time.
I will sue you. Or I think
you're doing something that's not in line with the Constitution, or which would be great if they invoke that document they've voted on. And I'm going to take you to court.
Right. And that in a way really is among the hardest of challenges. Anywhere, in any time, any civilization, to get people to understand, you do it in the legislature, you do it in the courts, or in the public media, and you don't go destroy other people.
Well, that is one prediction I made that I hope comes to pass, and because that will not only mean that a lot of our folks will be coming home, but it'll also mean, because I don't think it will happen. It won't go. The numbers won't go down that much if things aren't getting that much better. And Jim, one last thing on that I remind my audience about when we seem to sometimes get impatient with Iraqis. Democracy is not a chia pet. You don't add water and it pops up the next morning. It takes time, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and it really is sort of a basic human need and desire anywhere in the world. But if it has not existed in anyone's lifetime, it does take time. And we've seen the same thing in other places, whether Russia, other former Soviet satellite nations. It takes time.
All right. Let's move on down and talk about the housing market. This is a totally different topic. Back in the USA now, let's talk about the housing market. The housing market, the housing industry, that sector of the economy has really been robust over the last few years and has helped to drive the expansion, hasn't it, Jim?
Well, yes, it's been red hot, and no question about it. That it is driven, it has pushed economic expansion. In short, we see things cooling off a bit, but no housing bubble.
We
do not see a collapse in prices.
I think there's going to be I don't think there is going to be a bubble, Jim. I think there are going to be more than one bubble, but I think they're going to be localized. If there are bubbles at all, they're going to be in Miami and Phoenix or Burbank or somewhere like that. It's not going to be in Dubuque or Evansville or Nashville or somewhere like that. It's not going to happen there. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen where people are speculating, not where people are just living. And we're going to come back. We got more to come right after these messages. We're going to move on down and talk about some other issues, including the Fed. We're going to talk about consumer spending. We're going to talk a little bit about what the Dow is going to do this year. And we're going to do that right after these messages. It's 20 after. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. When you get a chance, I hope you go there. If you've already been going there, congratulations. Thank you for that. We appreciate the fact that you're using all the features that we're making available to you to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful in your small business, whether you have a one-person operation or whether you have dozens of employees. I think you'll find some stuff there that will help you. And don't forget to subscribe to my A pretty unique event is going to happen in about 3 weeks.
That's right.
Mr. Greenspan, Chairman Greenspan, Alan Greenspan of the Fed, who's been now, what's he been now, 17 years?
It's about that. It's
something
about,
like, what was it, 87?
I believe 87.
17 or 18 years that he has been the chairman of the Fed. Has anybody ever been the chairman of the Fed that long?
Yes. I think there was a Chairman Eccles, I think.
When nobody cared.
Well, but in modern times, no one has been there. I mean, or more modern times, really.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Fed's only been around since 1913.
Yeah.
But certainly a remarkable tenure he's had, hasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And I remember on the scene there when Greenspan came in 87, and there were people saying, well, Jesus, is he going to be able to continue Volcker's policies?
Volcker was the man in those days, wasn't he?
Oh, he was, and he was one, in a way, largely credited with busting what for us was hyperinflation in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
But
he got us to take the medicine.
That was it. It was hard medicine.
He got us to take the medicine, but you and I are well now. We're comparatively very healthy, the economy, because of that medicine we took in the 80s.
Absolutely, and we're not saying, geez, you know, better figure on 18 or 19% interest next year, and you better spend accordingly. Absolutely.
Right. And so Ben Bernanke, former economic professor at Princeton, former member of the Fed board and former advisor to the White House, mm-hmm. is now going to be the chairman as of after the 29th.
That's great.
I think it is. I think the 29th is the day that they're meeting. And is that right, 29th? I think that's what it is. No, not the 29th. That's a Saturday. I mean, a Sunday. Anyway, the last week, I'll find that later on. But the last meeting is the end of this month. And so what does Kiplinger have to say about how Mr. Bernanke is going to handle things?
Well, it's basically, you know, that he is actually even a more stricter inflation fighter than
more of an inflation hawk than Greenspan?
Than Greenspan. More concerned about potential problems that would arise if inflation suddenly fired up, and more or less, as we saw now nearly 20 years ago, and got out of hand, and so it is, we think, more likely, at least a little more likely, that we will see a Chairman Bernanke sort of lead the Fed, and of course where they'd be more likely mm-hmm. to raise interest rates, or at least roll that out even faster.
But Jim, you may be correct about his attitude, but he's got some other influences that are going to have to rein him in a little bit. One of the things I predicted is they would not raise the Fed funds rate beyond 5%. That means 0.75% away from where they are right now at 4.25%. And the reason is because the last thing he needs is to start his watch by having spun us into a recession.
A Fed-induced
recession.
That certainly is an issue. And, you really cannot dismiss the fact that, in a way, the Fed chairman appointment usually is for many, many years, as it turns out, though they have to reappoint it. They're often there many years. And like Supreme Court justices, of course, they're appointed for life, but their views and approaches often do change over the years. Coming into it, though, this Bernanke is very much an inflation hawk. He's concerned about this, and so it's more likely, in any event, at least, that he'll continue Greenspan's policies, which have been criticized in some quarters as being too out there to
I think that the idea of any Fed raising rates 13 times in a row is, I think that's preposterous. What it tells me is they made a mistake way back when they got down that low. Nobody does that many, that much consistently. It doesn't make any sense to me, and I think we may pay for that later. 29 after, stay with us, we'll be right back.
I spent a lot of money and I spent a lot of time. Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. Jim Osterhoff is our guest. I'm glad he's here, too. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And, Jim, we were talking about the Fed a minute ago, and I want to wrap one thing up about what I was trying to get to as we went to the break, and I just ran out of time. As you know, prior to raising rates, the Fed went on a tear where they lowered rates consistently one time after another, something like 10 times or something, to get down to 1% Fed funds rate. Now it's at 4 and a quarter, the Fed funds rate. And Jim, to me, if you watched anybody doing anything where they consistently, you know, went in one direction and without looking back, and then they turned around and went farther than that in the other direction, and you plotted that on a graph, in aviation we call that porpoising. If you fly your airplane like that, it's called porpoising. You're not trying to find the happy medium. You're going from one extreme to the other, and it winds up, you wind up typically oftentimes with a wreck. I guess my point, and I'll let you comment on this in a second. It'll be interesting to see if Mr. Bernanke makes little adjustments. And not just porpoising adjustments, but little adjustments up and down. See what I mean? I know that I'm not an economist, and I may be oversimplifying it, but if you plot what's happened over the last 6 or 7 years on a graph, it looks like a roller coaster.
Well, that is correct. It does, and there has certainly been criticism of the Fed to the effect that it was too forceful in cutting rates consistently, because it was fear that we'd be in a deep recession, and then it got to a point where also they risked something even worse, potential deflation at that point, because there was nowhere more to go. They couldn't really cut it much more, and then quickly ratcheted things up, you know, bit by bit by bit by bit by bit.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say there are a lot of negatives and downsides and problems for people and the economy in taking that tack.
Right. Well, and the thing is, Jim, even if they'd just taken a break,
right?
I mean, in those two times, the Fed went from going down to going up without taking any break, as I remember. No meeting happened without, maybe in the last 3 years now almost, or certainly over two years, no meeting happened without either going up or down with interest rates.
At least
take a break, you know. But anyway, let's move on and talk about consumer spending. How are consumers going to do in 2006?
Well, we think it'll be pretty good overall, you might say. There are various things here. Consumers and consumers writ large. I mean, one, you know, we do feel the stock market, the Dow Jones, is likely to hit a new high, which will eclipse the level of 11,723.
That's about a 9% increase over the next year.
It is, and we feel pretty strongly about that, and as well as for S&P and 500 and NASDAQ,
mm-hmm.
they'll grow strongly. And it's mainly that, the economy remains pretty good, and actually getting back to what we were saying before, if there is a slowdown, but not a burst, in real estate investment and spending, essentially it means that there's less competition, you know, for the money from real estate. And plus, there is the outlook is pretty good for corporate America.
What I think you're saying, what you're talking about is that real estate has made people feel a lot wealthier over the last few years. And so if the real estate market softens a little bit, but the stock market picks up because it won't be competing for those dollars, mm-hmm. those investment dollars, maybe consumers will find a way of finding wealth in the stock market. And actually, as you know, maybe a little more liquidity in the stock market than they'd have in their real estate.
Well, that is a real concern, a real issue, and something that we think will contribute to more investment and mm-hmm. Further growth in the Dow Jones as well as the other indexes.
Moving on down, talking a little politics, Kiplinger has a few things to say about the opportunities that the Democrats might have for turning things around with regard to the majority in the House and in the Senate. What does Kiplinger think will happen?
In short, we see the Republicans maintaining their majorities in the House and the Senate come the midterm elections in November.
Once again, Kiplinger has lurched uncontrollably to the truth.
Well, we do try.
That's exactly what's going to happen, Jim.
Right, right, right.
And the reason that you know that is because that's what I predicted. And if yes, I said it, you know it's right, don't you?
I agree, absolutely.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
You can count on it.
Quick break, 2010. We'll be right when we come back. We're going to see what Kiplinger thinks the Supreme Court's going to do. And we're also going to talk about some baby boomers and how that is going to affect you and me. It's 2010. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17-2. I'm Jim Blassingame. Visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, your website is Kiplinger.com, and that's where folks can subscribe to your letters, can't they? Your weekly Kiplinger letter and the three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter. And also you got that magazine thing going on too, don't you?
Yes, that magazine thing, Kiplinger Personal Finance. Yes, we do.
Exactly. It's outstanding. You can get it at newsstands as well, but you can also subscribe at their website. And you got a phone number, Jim?
Yes, I do. There's a toll-free number. It's 800-544-0155.
As I said, folks, I've been reading Kiplinger for decades, and these days I get it two ways. I get it electronically and in print. And so just to make sure, I call that the belt and suspenders approach, Jim, to make sure I don't miss it. Okay, let's move on down and talk about the Supreme Court. Kiplinger says that the Supreme Court is going to be moving more on the conservative side, and therefore I'm assuming that you guys are predicting that Judge Sam Alito will be confirmed.
Yeah, we believe he will be. I mean, you know, there are, and might say some rightful questions raised, as there always are, and you might say always should be, but at the end of the day, we do not see his nomination being derailed, and you know, we believe that his addition, along with Roberts and the others, will shift the court, likely shift the balance to be a bit more conservative than it has been over the last even 10 years.
You know, Jim, a lot of people say that Iraq is going to be Mr. Bush's legacy, but if we could possibly make room for one more, it's going to have to be the Supreme Court.
It is. And
especially when you consider, don't forget, he's got three more years to go.
That's right.
And there's at least, you know, John Paul Stevens is 116 or something like that, isn't he?
We're 17 or
yeah, something.
Like that.
I'm not being disrespectful, folks.
No,
I'm just teasing.
No.
But he is like 87 years old.
Well, yeah.
And you know, I hope he lives to be a million years old. But you know, let's just be realistic. There is a chance that you know he could be making. He could retire. He could be get tired and say, you know, I want to retire or whatever. But you know, there could be at least one more opportunity for Mr. Bush to impact the court.
There absolutely can be and most likely will be, we believe. And don't forget, really, you know, one of also the sometimes overlooked legacies of Ronald Reagan was his Supreme Court nominees and
Absolutely.
Appointment.
Absolutely. Let's move on down and talk about baby boomers. First baby boomers are turning 60, Jim, mine and your generation.
That is it. That is correct. The biggest generation of all.
Yeah.
And it does have enormous implications in our business and society, as it has actually since 1967, when the first boomers came into the majority.
Right, exactly. But as we retire, it's gonna create some people. In some ways, it's gonna create a lot of different a lot of interesting influences on our society and on our economy, not the least of which will be on the entitlements situation, the Social Security, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, just think that beginning January 1 and for the next nearly 20 years, I had the number, something like 20,000 every day will turn, actually will turn 60 and then 65. Right. There are 75 million people who become eligible for various benefits in the coming year.
Including Medicare.
Medicare and...
and Social Security. Something's going to have to be done, and I fear they've waited too long. Mr. Bush tried to make that happen, but it'll be interesting. The next few years will be interesting to see how the government deals with the impending demands that the baby boomers are going to place on the entitlements issue. Jim, let's move on down and talk about... Let's talk about number 10. Let's move all the way down and talk about the computer security issue. You guys say that organized crime... Right. Will be more aggressive in trying to get into our computers. Talk to us about that.
Yes, and again, it's like the old story about bank robber Willie Sutton, and they asked him why he did it. He said, "Why'd you rob banks? That's where the money is."
Right.
And that's where the money is now. And over here, you might say, in some ways, it's a quote unquote clean crime. You're not shooting anybody. You're kidnapping people, and the take. Can be bigger. You can go and say, in essence, rip off enough information to do phony credit cards or debit somebody's account. Mm-hmm. You're in and you're out. No one knows, and you're gone with the money unless they can catch you.
Well, and the organized crime. We're not talking about the Sopranos here. We're talking about organized worldwide crime
absolutely.
Groups like in Russia, places like that.
I must say, Russia has been a hotbed of these activities.
So, folks, the point there is we're all going to have to be more diligent in how we secure our computers, if you don't have a security software system, McAfee or what's the other one? I've just lost it for a second. But if you don't have a security system on your computer, even if you say, I'm just using email, I'm just surfing a little bit, what's the big deal? Well, folks, you over time you'll have information about yourself and your computer, and if you aren't protecting it, then basically what you've done is you've opened your world, your life up to people who can get in there and get your information, steal your Social Security number, and maybe even apply for a credit card, right, Jim?
Absolutely. Credit card, your bank account, any financial holdings that you have potentially, and of course that includes reaching onto your computer desktop and taking information.
Exactly.
Don't put it there.
Norton is that other company, folks. McAfee and Norton, two companies. At least those two. There are others probably, but those are the ones that I know about the most. Check those out. Go to their websites, and it doesn't cost a lot of money, and it's well worth the investment. Tintel, I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and Jim Ostroff is our guest. He's with the Kiplinger Editors. He's associate editor there. Jim, let's move on down and talk about the avian flu thing. News there is that a young brother and sister in Turkey have contracted the disease. The news is that they're the first people who've contracted this disease outside of the Asian area. Right.
That is right.
So that's kind of troubling. It's still not morphed or mutated, I should say, to the point where it's going from human to human. It's going from bird to human. And what they fear, Jim, as we've reported before, is that it will mutate like it is. We think that it may have in the past other strains of this type of virus, and go from human to human. And when that happens, Jim, all bets are off, isn't it?
All bets are off, and it will be a world-changing event if that happened, because one could figure that scores of millions of people will die, and many times that will become infected if that happened. And, the U.S. and other nations are doing a great deal now trying to anticipate that and do whatever they can to mitigate any problems if they occur. But the thing is, as you mentioned correctly here, you know, viruses mutate very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing as every year here where basically medical officials make a guess about the type of regular flu that's going to be, you know, out there the coming year. And they make a vaccine. They may guess wrong, and sometimes they have.
Look what happened with AIDS.
Exactly.
I mean, that was animal born for a long time.
That's right.
And then it started mutated to the point where we go from human to human. But the thing that I like to remind people about is that the reason why politicians are getting so excited about this is because of the mortality rate of this disease. The Spanish influenza had about a 2 or 3% mortality rate. This one seems to have, at least currently, it has about a 50% mortality rate. So I am glad that politicians are getting out front of this thing. Hopefully that I don't think it's anything that any of us need to worry about this year. But it is something I think we need to support and make sure that our politicians are focusing on it to make sure that we have the drugs that we need, if there is such a thing as a drug that will kind of help in treating it. Jim, let's move over and talk to us about postal rates. The post office, I think, now has a surplus, if I'm not mistaken.
It does. It's a slight surplus.
But they're still planning on raising rates. How much?
Two cents on Sunday, and a year from now, look for about another 3 cents.
So it's going to be a 39-cent stamp?
37 to 39 cents on Sunday, and then probably early next January, look for a 42-cent stamp.
So it's not going to help us to make a run on the post office, right? Because
if we
buy the stamps, 37-cent stamps today, if it goes to the post office on Monday, we got to put two more cents on it.
You would need, most likely. I mean, they may.
So it doesn't do any good to hoard stamps, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Go and buy those 2 cent stamps if you must to make up for the difference, because otherwise they'll send it back to you.
Right.
I mean, two things there. One, I mean, they are being affected by the fact that more people are doing email, less snail mail. And also, over here, we have Congress and the White House insisting that the U.S. Postal Service pay the military retirement benefits of people who work for the Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stamp tax.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Basically so. Okay, automobile companies, automobile manufacturers, you guys talk about what's in store for those guys in 2006. I predicted that GM, that one of the companies, and I predicted it would probably be GM, would be in Chapter 11 bankruptcy by the end of the year.
I wouldn't bet a penny against that. It's very difficult, for General Motors.
Delphi, one of the companies, well, the parts company GM spun off a few years ago, Delphi is already in Chapter 11.
They're in Chapter 11, and the thing is that Delphi makes parts absolutely critical, particularly for Ford and GM.
Right.
If Delphi went out, those companies could not make vehicles, period.
Right.
They're stuck.
And of course they're in Chapter 11, which means they can continue to operate.
They're operating.
That's not dissolving the company, but Chapter 7 would be, which anytime you go into Chapter 11, you run the risk of having to, you know, to liquidate in Chapter 7.
It can happen. Fly Independence Air, Fly I, just 2 months after Chapter 11, they announced effective tomorrow, I believe, they're going out of business.
This week they're out of business, Hey, Jim Ostroff, thank you for being here. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for helping us get ours kicked off, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, everyone.
Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.